Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, and I'm the editor-in-chief of the Science of Psychotherapy, and I'm here with managing editor Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Matt. Here we are again. I'd like to tell you that I have survived the weekend.
You have?
Yes, because I have been Papa all weekend with my little three-year-old, gorgeous Stevie, and I am absolutely and completely knackered.
Right.
I only dropped her once. So it was a successful weekend. But anyway, no, it's really great. It's really great to be back because, you know, dealing with little ones and dealing with Stevie and managing the world, well, this is kind of what we're talking about today, something really quite different and a little bit interesting.
We are. We're talking about something different and interesting. We're actually going to talk to some people who are on the hardware of a thing that we've talked about in the past, and that's to help us with neurofeedback. So the actual neurofeedback device, the headset that we put on our head, we're going to talk to some people in Queensland who are redesigning. You'll get to hear how they're making some changes in how these headsets are made.
And it's another one of those beautiful stories that's been motivated out of the needs of the builder, of the guy. I mean, it's lovely. He's done all kinds of degrees, and you'll have a look at those in a minute. But he and his daughter, I mean, what a wonderful motivation to go out to try and make something better, to make people better.
So we'll let these guys tell the story. So we're going to go across and talk to Casey Pfluger and Amy Rose Goody from Cortex Brain Technologies. Casey and Amy Rose, thanks so much for joining us here on the show. How are you both?
Yeah, really good.
I'm amazing. Beautiful. Well,
and it's Richard here. Lovely to see you. Very nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Richard.
Now, you guys have got this very interesting project, Cortex Brain Technologies. You're building some hardware that's going to help a lot of people in doing neurofeedback. So, Casey, do you want to kick us off and just give us a bit of a outline of what your project is all about?
Yeah, sure. We started out basically because I was looking for a therapy for my daughter and myself because we both have ADHD and autism. Mm-hmm. And couldn't find either a cost-effective or actual therapy that my daughter would actually want to use. And that was the core reason why Cortex was founded. And as I talked to more and more people, I found that there was really an empty gap in therapy availability for people to use at home.
Okay.
So it became something that we could provide to people like myself or other people with other conditions that can benefit from neurofeedback. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's been a long road, but it feels like we're getting closer to the actual physical product in our hands, which will be really, really exciting. So
now, this is an actual EEG headset, right? This is a monitor for your brain.
Started out as an EEG system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my email's still Cortex EEG, but we've actually transitioned to a near-infrared system now.
Okay.
Because we found that that no matter what we did for a home system with all the electrical noise in the vicinity of people at home, mm-hmm. and the fact that people want to use it when they're moving around was a real problem.
Okay.
So we switched to near infrared. So we're looking at blood flow rather than electrical activity now.
Ah.
And we're okay. confident that based on the functional MRI studies, that you can do neurofeedback based on the blood flow, and that does correlate with the brain activity. So, yeah, that was my first step, was does this actually match up with EEG? Is it actually going to work? Because the worst thing we could possibly do would be to make something that didn't do what we said it did, mm-hmm. because there's all too many of these brain-computer interface devices that have a very nice appearance, but they don't pass any of the clinical tests when researchers go and grab them.
Okay.
So that was my concern, to make sure that we had the science down, if it makes sense.
Yeah. So this is a fundamentally different process then. Instead of looking at electrical activity, we're looking at blood flow. So do the same principles apply when we look at the traditional way of doing neurofeedback?
From my understanding, yes, because all of the functional MRI studies based on around neurofeedback, which, as you may or may not know, is based around measuring hemoglobin levels and types of hemoglobin in the brain. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at blood flow, and when they look at blood flow, they can do neurofeedback effectively the same way you can do with EEG. So they find that it directly correlates with the amount of brain activity and area as to how much blood flow. So for EEG, I think there's a 1 millisecond measurement, 1/1000th of a millisecond it measures, and we're doing with the near-infrared 10 microseconds. We're measuring every 10 microseconds. So it's a slightly slower, but in the range of things, for say for an MRI, functional MRI, they have one measurement a second.
Right.
So an EEG measures 1,000 times faster than a functional MRI. Yep. We're measuring 10 times slower than an EEG, but still in that range, it's so tiny that they're quite comparable.
Right. And again, trying to draw the comparison between two systems, like with quantitative EEG, are you looking at a set of so-called norms that you're wanting to entrain the brain toward, or what's your therapeutic approaches?
Definitely. So looking at getting a baseline, we're not just measuring the easy locations on the skin that doesn't have hair on it. We're looking at the core arrangement of a traditional EEG style system. And the extra bonus is that near infrared components are a lot easier to work with. And we can actually easily snap them on and snap them off. So if we've got a problem with one, it's pretty easy to replace, which I find pretty exciting, because I like the idea of if you've got a kit and you get extra bits and pieces with it, so you don't have to replace the whole thing like you do so often with the other standalone ones, where it's all really tightly built in.
Yes, yes.
I like a Lego style system myself.
Right, right.
That's what I grew up with.
So we can customize it. We can make it all pretty and.
Okay.
Sorry about that. So if we're children, particularly, I can imagine my daughter or even Casey's daughter wanting to customize the headset, because essentially it'll be something that you'll have in your own house, and everything you have in your own house reflects you as a character or as a person. So it's going to be part of a gaming system as well. Yeah, like Casey said, it's the end product is going to be, hopefully, if it all goes well, pretty cool to use and look.
Yeah, I like the fact of this integration of the messages that the brain is sending out, which is really what the whole process. We're sending messages in, the brain is sending messages out. And, some of our preliminary discussions, I was talking about some of the work with that was done previously with locked-in patients, and Niels Birbaumer did this work, and he found EEG didn't give him enough information, and he combined EEG with oxygenation processes, which he did with functional near-infrared spectrometry. And it was the combination of those two that gave the human beings watching the machinery the ability to get a better reading of the brain's messages. And it's that systems method, and which leads me now into...
Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because for EEG, it's really on the surface. It doesn't measure deep, but it measures like a bulk activity. You need a certain number of millions of nerves all firing at once to get even the change in the EEG to happen. And also the near-infrared, it goes in a lot deeper. The duration we're looking at is about 8 centimetres on the basis of previous work anyway.
So we're just learning how to figure out how to listen to these biomarkers, and you guys are working in this much more sensitive way of how to talk to these biomarkers. Is that a reasonable sort of...
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay, cool.
It's a way of translating an inner process to something that you can sense. The idea of adding a sense to a person's sensorium.
Right. Yeah. So just rewind just a little bit to the sense of depth, because that's a really intriguing aspect of this system. Is that a fixed depth that you are monitoring?
No, it depends on the way that we set up the sensors. It's a bit like radar in a way, because you send a tiny pulse of near-infrared in and you measure the echoes that come out.
Okay.
And depending on how far away from that sensor that you are depends on the depth that it's being bounced away from.
Okay.
It runs out in concentric rings around the sensor. The initial point of stimulation.
Yeah.
Not so much stimulation, but more kind of like an echo chamber going from one point and moving out.
So
it's not a fixed depth, no, but that's the maximum depth.
That's the maximum depth, okay.
That's based on work where they do a lot of work with this, where they use really high-powered near-infrared now to treat people with stroke injuries that haven't resolved after the initial treatment or with the platelet thinning treatments.
Yeah,
they found that they can trigger a healing process. So there's something weird that happens with higher-powered near-infrared.
Right.
It seems to trigger the neurotrophic factors.
Okay.
I thought it was really fascinating. I had no idea that there were surgeons all over the US and in other countries doing this, like really high-powered near-infrared laser work and having some pretty miraculous and documented results. So, yeah, it's comforting to know that they're seeing improvements from that in a way that they weren't expecting.
Yes, although a technology that you couldn't really just use just for monitoring, because it would have a invasive effect.
No, definitely not going to use that level of power they're talking about.
No.
Probably 10,000 times as powerful as we're looking at using.
Right.
So what's the human experience in this? Because as you say, Casey and Amy, you know, we're working with, you've got your own case study working with you, with Casey and his daughter. These things are opening up a technological interface to create a more successful conversation, the principal result, to improve and enhance the human experience. Can we go to that area? I must admit, I love the technology, but I also am as fascinated by this as actually a psychotherapeutic tool.
Is
what it is.
That's something that, I see a psychiatrist, because he has the best drugs, of course, for my ADHD. And, he's been quite fascinated by what we're doing and really referring me to people to talk to who are really interested in what we're doing, because what they really want is something that they could use with their patients and see what's happening as they go through the session, or to help them monitor themselves as they go through some, say, for example, they're reliving something traumatic. They can actually see what's happening in their brain as it happens.
Mm.
Perhaps see that heat map, even seeing that heat map might be something that just like really gets people. Like if you see that as soon as you start thinking about this, immediately your fear center is starting to really heat up.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, imagine the impact of that. That is just, it's like a visual CBT almost.
Yes.
Right.
So, Amy, are you thinking in the context of, at all, as you're working with this, as the context of the differences that there is between this more self-activating process or the brain activating process as different from the sort of rather club-fisted thing of medications? Is that something that you're spending a lot of time becoming aware of, or what's your attention to that aspect?
Look, what I found really exciting about this project and what we're doing is the accessibility factor. So it is really quite expensive to receive neurofeedback therapy. It's also, it takes a while. It's also to travel to and from a facility to get neurofeedback therapy, because last year neurofeedback was approved as a therapy for ADHD.
It was a global recognition as a clinical therapy.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty fantastic. It was like, for all this time I've been trying to explain, this really is a real thing.
Yeah.
There's all this research. There's 20 plus years of research to back it up.
Yeah.
Sure, it sounds too good to be true. And I understand you're going, if it sounds too good to be true, typically it is. And that's what I thought when I first saw it, because it was like, really? You got those results from just doing that? Really?
Yeah.
Mm. So this is my scientist skepticism that really got me interested in this in the first place, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because it just seemed too good to be true that people could.
Yeah, we've heard the same comments from other neurofeedback artists saying, we've been doing this for 20 years and now at last we're getting some recognition. So, So Amy, you've just got something in there?
So I think we all want something portable. We all want something that we can access at home. Not having that available at the moment, it's having a huge impact in the country who have ADHD, autism and other neurological conditions. Most people can't access it. My sister-in-law recently was quoted way outside of her budget, but she can't afford that. And her daughter has ADHD, but she absolutely needs the neurofeedback therapy. So what I can see happening with the device that we put to market is it will solve a massive problem for people not being able to receive the therapy, having to rely on medications, which, look, some people don't cope well having to take those types of medications all the time. Yeah, well, I'm excited about the future of therapy that doesn't include taking medications and does include being able to stay at home and not having to travel long distances and pay huge amounts of money to access.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, isn't it, Matt, that accessibility and affordability?
Absolutely. And this will be, correct me if I'm wrong, a system like other neurofeedback systems where you have a game or games that you play to entrain the brain in a certain way?
Yeah, that's definitely the plan, that it's something that can engage people like my daughter who will engage very directly with games.
Yeah.
Yep.
For a very long time, but if you wanted to concentrate on anything else, you really struggles even with medication.
Mm-hmm. So
that was another thing that grabbed me, that it could be a game-based therapy. It's so much easier to engage with something like that, especially if you've got already issues with concentration.
I did a lot of work with my research project of one, but just with my stepson, with a lot of focusing and attention and ADD types of problems and things. And I fundamentally just used personally engaged curiosity as the found him stuff that he was interested in.
It was also when I was trying my daughter with a system called Emotive that was one of the another reason that got me really interested.
One of these.
The wet system.
Yeah.
And our daughter has sensory issues. And the fact that she was willing to have this wet thing sitting on her head just because she was so fascinated at seeing what was happening in her brain, she got past something that normally would have her recoiling in horror at having something different on her head.
Yeah.
She was so fascinated that she got past that. That really kind of got me there. If we could engage that, that'd be really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've written a couple of papers on the nature of the way the neurochemistry shifts in response to curiosity. So it's really helpful to. So this is an additional thing. So it's interesting, Matt. Interesting.
Absolutely, and I've had some experience with this wet sort of system, and to be able to spend the time to make sure all the sensors are actually making good contact and that they remain in good contact is an issue.
Now, when you say wet, it doesn't mean you're doing this in the shower.
No. That just means that the little sensors that touch the scalp have to have a bit of a wet contact with the scalp the electrical activity is read properly.
I'm so glad.
It basically it kind of moisturizes the dry skin on the outer skin so that the signals from below that skin can go through.
Yes,
and the really expensive stuff is the thick gel paste type stuff that you do in the shower.
Yes, I've had that, and it's I'm not sensorially sensitive.
I don't think it's designed for comfort.
Yeah.
No, I had an 84 EEG setup as a research guinea pig. Because I was always keen when I was a researcher to play the guinea pig for studies like that. It took them an hour and a half to set that up.
Yeah.
Just to get all those 84 contacts. And now they're going to 300
So if you've got something that a kid can just
amount of time.
A kid can just put on, you know, like a helmet without all of this set up, then that is.
I like the idea of it being a bit like the Marvel helmet that you can. It just enhances you a little bit and gives you that extra sense you didn't have before.
Yeah, yeah. Now, where are you guys up to with this developing this product? Are you ready to go to market, or sort of where are you up to?
At this stage, we just won an early innovation prize with Binex Queensland. So that was their inaugural program. So
congratulations. Well done.
Really happy with that and amazed to be recognised that way. That lets us go into industrial design. So ironically, it's the industrial design company that we're going with.
Right.
Who initially referred me to a TAFE plastics manufacturing people, who then referred me to the bionic ear people, who then referred me to Bionics Queensland as it was forming over the last year or so, and then it's come back in a full circle that we're working with them to develop our product, because I haven't been able to find anyone else who really gets exactly what we want to do straight from the go.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Brisbane has been shown, what I've seen through this Bionic Queensland Challenge and winning that prize, Brisbane is thriving with bionics and innovation. The circle that Casey just explained just indicates that everyone is connected and everyone is helping each other.
No, it is interesting that the where the money goes and where the interest in the money goes, you know,
in
different states.
It's a bit of a terrifying amount of money and effort that goes into this. I was saying to Amy Rose the other day that when I started this, I definitely didn't expect to be. I expected to be doing a lot more designing and building, and a lot less paperwork and negotiating with people than I've ended up having to do. So it's not only been out of my comfort zone as a former scientist, but it's been out of my comfort zone of having to interact with people so much.
Right.
Being able to do it in something that I'm really fascinated in, it makes it a lot easier. So,
and have you used the system yourself to assist your mental states to better manage this bureaucratic type of work you have to do? Is it? Have you had any?
I definitely will in future.
Yeah, thanks.
Right. I'll definitely be using it myself. I'll be definitely experimenting in every way I possibly can.
But we are still developing the actual.
Still developing. We managed to get some actual data off a basic system, so that was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
But Amy Rose has been kind of kicking me since then because we didn't record it, and then we disassembled the system, so we've got to rebuild again and actually record producing real data out of signals. So.
Okay. Yeah.
So everything we do, I chase Casey. I need the data. I need evidence. I need that in a document. I need to show that to investors. I need to compile all of this data together to make it presentable and to go out and try and get more funding, basically.
It's a beautiful example of what we talk about in all kinds of aspects, particularly psychotherapy, of co-creation of things, of the value of combining brains and utilizing coordinated things, and now this adding this interface. I mean, Matt and I would say the same thing. There are things that, if it weren't for the other one, things would be missed and left. So there's a great partnership going on there, I'd say.
Finding someone like Amy Rose to work with on this is it's just really pushed us beyond the point of anything we could have been doing before, because she brings an extra dimension to what we're doing. So the fact she still wants to work with me is an amazing thing.
I say that so at yes.
I'm always very, very appreciative that I'm not kind of annoying people to the point of frustration with my fascination with this kind of stuff, but for some reason she shares my excitement with it, and other people seem to be getting on board. So
at face value, it sounds like a very exciting project, and I dare say that not just for therapeutic applications, I'd say there's a lot of researchers who would be very interested in this sort of device as well.
I think so. And we're going to do our best to make a system where they can actually access the data without having to pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been pretty disappointed with some of the research systems out there that they make researchers pay a monthly fee.
Yeah.
And they'd make anyone pay a monthly fee. I think that's, if you've got a device that you've purchased and you want to access the data for a research project or to build software or do something interesting, why lock it to a paid system?
Yeah, and these are some of the things that you're approaching and mindful of, Amy, by the sounds of the partnership. You know, create your own data, create as much of it you can yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And also bring the consumer in to, I guess, give authority to share data without just taking it from them.
Or the European model where it's their right to start with rather than a right that they don't have but they kind of are given a little bit of control over. No, it's your data.
It's absolutely. You own the data.
If you choose to do it, it's a commodity that you own and that you should be recompensed for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Matt, this looks like a fabulous thing. I'm so glad we've been able to introduce it. But probably at this point, I need to have a think about some of all this stuff and I want to go back and check some things. So I think maybe our listeners might be in the same place. What do you think?
Absolutely. Casey and Amy Rose, your project sounds amazing. We are going to watch this space and we'd love you to stay in touch and let us know how it's progressing.
Yeah, we'd love to.
It'd be wonderful.
I'd love to send you both one once we've got it up and running so you can have a play.
Oh, I'm so fascinated.
You might want to play with it with. I'm really looking forward to that, to being able to show people and send them around and have people tell us what's good and what's bad and what you like, what you don't like.
Well, I'm going to get Matt to write a fanfare. but I know how exciting it is, and at this stage, we're not at the point where we can pick up the item and doing it. So this is the exciting time to talk about it. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this stuff.
We really appreciate you taking the time with us to talk to people from your perspective, where you're involved in an area that we've been thinking about it going into, but maybe not exploring it as much as we could because we just don't have that background.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyone out there listening who's got some money and some brains and an interest in this stuff, here's two guys and girls that are really worth backing.
Absolutely. We'll put links in the show notes so that anyone interested, they can jump on and have a look at Cortex Brain Technologies. Awesome. Casey and Amy Rose, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Nice to meet you both.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
That was just so interesting, Matt. I mean, it is surprising because, of course, they're not just talking the technology, as we're saying. It's really motivated. They've got all kinds of interesting histories.
They do. So Casey, I mean, he's the founder of this Cortex Brain Technologies, and he's had over 20 years in medical research, development and application, so right in his element.
And Amy Rose, I mean, she's got a fascinating background.
Yeah, so Amy, she's done community services and disability. She's got a Bachelor of Building Design, postgrad in education. She spent 10 years in the tech industry. She's done a lot of different things.
Yeah, but all these things adding up to being able to produce this amazing development. And I think we captured it when we just said this is the beginning of a couple of decades of extraordinary growth, change and development, I think. And this is the beginning of it.
Yeah, I'm especially excited about the prospect of having one of these headsets that a kid could just put on and just start working because I know for myself, having mucked around with some of these technologies, that it takes a lot of mucking around, you know, to get good contact, to get a good EEG. And so having something that's easy to use, that's very accessible, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, we're not quite at Star Wars yet, but we're getting there.
We're getting there. Okay, so, well, thanks everybody for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. And if you enjoy what we are on about, you can join us over at thescienceofpsychotherapy.net and you can become a subscriber there. And there's a whole heap of benefits as a subscriber and you'll help us keep on keeping on.
And keep on keeping on we are, but that's all for now.
Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.